Hello everyone, and thanks for joining us today on our Richmond Hill Soccer Club podcast. My name is Bobby Lennox, and as usual, I'm your host for today's podcast. On today's podcast, you have the chance to chat one of the club's newest technical staff, Sue Herring. Sue, welcome and thanks for joining me on today's podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me, Bobby.
That was short and sweet, Sue, but anyway, we'll carry on. Hopefully we get more out of Sue than we did then. So today the plan is to find out more about Sue. We'll have a chat with Sue about her background and what she will bring to Richmond Hill Soccer Club. So Sue, let's get right into it and maybe take us back and tell us a bit about your background, where you grew up and what was your first introduction to football.
So I grew up in England. I'm from Doncaster, which is in Yorkshire. My first introduction to football was going to watch Doncaster Rovers play at the old Bellevue ground. I remember going, the guy actually let my dad lift us over the turnstile, and we went in and watched Doncaster, and they won. I think it was 5-3. I still remember the game.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the few victories, I think. So that was how I got introduced. We went to a few more games, but Doncaster were low-level teams, so we actually started going to Old Trafford and watching Man United. So we used to go regularly to watch games there, and I also played. There was no girls' teams, so I played with the boys. I played at school, and I played in local teams, but always on boys' teams. I was the only girl. And that was probably through to around 12, 13 years old. And then I wasn't allowed to play with the boys anymore. And luckily, the local team was Doncaster Bells, which at the time was one of the best women's soccer teams in the country. And I started playing for them when I was 13. And I played for them right through until I was 18 and went to college.
That's great. So it's interesting you spoke about getting lifted over the turnstiles. I remember as a kid going to Glasgow to watch Celtic, and it was very, very commonplace to see young boys getting lifted over with their dads or their uncles. And it always amazed me because they would announce a crowd of maybe 60,000, but probably there's an extra 20,000 8, 9, 10-year-old boys in the crowd. So obviously that doesn't happen nowadays with health and safety and regulations. Everyone has to have a ticket and they're scanned in. So interesting as well, so you spoke about playing with boys as a young girl, and how was that experience playing with boys? Because we find in Canada, and maybe you've come across this in Canada, that there's a lot of parents of the girls really are not comfortable with their daughters playing with boys. How was your experience playing with the boys as a young girl in England? And do you think it'd be beneficial for girls or non-beneficial for girls to play with boys here in Canada?
Yeah, I always had a really positive experience playing with the boys. I didn't have any options because there was no girls' teams, but I loved playing with the boys. I loved the challenge of playing with the boys. All my best friends were boys, and that came through playing football mostly. We would, you know, after school, we would play until it got dark. We would play on the weekends. And I think as a girl, it's a great experience to play with the boys if you want to. I think I always wanted to. I didn't mind the challenge, but I think had there been girls' teams, I probably would have still wanted to play with the boys. Back then, I really enjoyed it. And the only reason I stopped playing was actually parents in England, when I was at school, stopped it happening when I got to 12 and 13. They didn't want a girl playing with the boys. So then I obviously moved to the girls' team. But for me, I think it's a great thing to mix boys and girls playing if they want to at the younger ages. Physically, I think I was just as strong as the boys. I think my game really developed playing with them.
Yeah, it's interesting, Sue. It's something we have to investigate a little bit further, and don't just accept that, you know, the gender should be split just because a boy's a boy and a girl's a girl. I think there's psychological benefits, social benefits for mixing those genders. Certainly my young daughter, she started playing with boys and she never gave it a second thought. There was a couple of girls in the team. I think there was a roster of maybe 12 or something like that, and there was 10 boys and 2 girls, but she never gave it a second thought. She just assumed that that's what happened. Boys played with girls. Not until she got older, I guess, and she realised there actually was teams separated by gender. But certainly it seemed to help her because she developed into quite a tidy little player. So, Sue, you mentioned you went to Doncaster Bells as a 13-year-old. And at what age did you leave Doncaster Bells, or did you move from Doncaster Bells, or what time did you kind of hang up your boots, so to speak, from playing?
So I played for Doncaster for 5 years, which was a great experience for me, obviously, because they were a top team. So we had a bunch of England internationals and under 21s on the team, and we won some competitions. So even though I think one or two of those years I played regularly in the first team, the rest of the time I was mostly a bench player, but it was a fantastic experience. And then I went to university. So I went to university in Newcastle. So I ended up playing for a local team there. And I actually started the university team at Newcastle because they didn't have one. So I played still there. And then just for a few years after university, I was around in England down in Cornwall, and I played in some local leagues down there. And then that was probably the end of my career. Playing was around mid-20s because I moved to America to coach.
Okay, that's great, Sue. And that kind of leads into our next question. So you've played at a high level. You've played with Doncaster Rovers was the men's team. And then you went to university and you played at university and you played there, and then you start getting involved in coaching. So tell us what kind of led into coaching and what got you involved in coaching and where, when, and how that all happened, your coaching journey.
The coaching really started at university for me. I was on a sport management course, and at the end of the first year, one of the boys arranged with Northumberland FA to run the old FA prelim badge, which is kind of the equivalent of the C license. And they asked for a bunch of us off the course, so it was me again and all men. We did the Northumberland FA, ran it for us, and we all got the qualification, and then they gave us some work. So I got into a bit of coaching. Like I say, I started the women's team at university and I played and coached it. And then I kind of took a little bit of time still to play. I still preferred playing, so I was playing more. And when I was down in Cornwall, I started doing a little bit of coaching, some local school programs, and then I saw the adverts for people to go and coach in America, and that's what really started it for me. So I applied to a coaching company that was based out of Washington, D.C., and they accepted me because they were looking particularly for female coaches as well. They didn't have very many, and they offered me a contract. I went out to America in 2000, and that really started the full-time coaching for me.
America, yeah, the land of milk and honey, Sue. Wonderful. So you headed out to the USA. Maybe tell us a bit about that, Sue. I mean, obviously a big shock for you coming from England, different parts of the country in England, and you were still a relatively young lady and you're moving to America. Maybe you can tell us a bit about that experience, both on and off the football field.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it was a fantastic experience for me. I would recommend it to anybody who has the chance. We lived in houses again. It was mostly guys, but they put us in houses. They gave us cars to drive around, and the company had started off as a camp company. So throughout the summer for 12 weeks, we moved to different communities every week. Parents put us up for their kid to go on camp for free. And we got to see the local community. They always did lots of things with us. You know, they wanted to show us their area. So we had crazy experiences. We went to baseball games. We went in D.C. We went to a private tour of the White House and the Pentagon. Golfing, anything they could do to show us a good time. And then they became a year-round coaching company. So I worked year-round for them. And in the fall, in the spring, we did teams, associations, after-school programs, all those kind of things, and we did we just really, really got to see and did some more coaching qualifications there. They really promoted that, and I also coached a high school varsity team, And that was a crazy experience as well, like being interviewed and under the lights, right, and going on buses to games. It was totally different to anything I'd experienced in England.
The sports system in the US is certainly well developed, and they totally value the sport, Sue, for sure. So you started talking there, Sue, about coaching qualifications. You had mentioned you had got some in England before you left, and then you came to the US. Maybe talk our listeners through the types of qualifications you have, and what was involved in getting those qualifications, and talk about, you know, the value of maybe getting some coaching qualifications.
Yeah, so I mean, I started with the one in England, which was a week-long course. We did it at the university, and that was sort of my introduction to proper formalized coaching, with an exam, a few exams, and a practice at the end that you had to pass, somebody watching you. And then the reason I did the American ones is because I was obviously in America, and I actually did the American C license in Las Vegas, and they put us up in a hotel on the just off the strip, and we did the course at UNLV. So that was pretty crazy. It was like a week of living in a casino and doing a coaching course.
Cool.
And that was my first time of knowing that in January in Vegas it gets really cold. Nobody had taken the correct clothing, so we were all freezing.
Yeah.
And that was still assessed during the week, but it was again a good learning experience. And then I did the American National B, but just because it was easier to get the National B. I was still sort of living around. Again, 9 days, some fantastic coaches there. We got to work with some great players. And then when I came to Canada, I wanted to get obviously the Canadian qualifications. I think it's important to learn the systems of the places you're in, because even when I went to America, it was a different way of doing things. So luckily for my time in Alberta, I was able to just see and the C license and the provincial B, and I actually have been working on being a learning facilitator and teaching people in those and the NCCP courses. And they also put me through the National B, the equivalent of the American one. So I've got the Canadian National B. And now currently I'm taking the children's license as well. So it's good to see, you know, that there's licenses related to the ages that we're working with, rather than everybody having to get a National B and it's not really related to working with the younger players. So I think the children's license, with its focus on the younger players but still being a valuable license, is a real step forward in Canada.
Yeah, it's wonderful, Sue. Obviously with your experience and the experience from different countries, different environments, along with your vast qualifications, it's a great honour for a club like Richmond Hill to have a coach of your experience and knowledge, and certainly the formal qualifications back that up. You had mentioned, Sue, that you had you mentioned Alberta there in your last little chat. So maybe tell our listeners, you know, when you left the US and your first venture into Canada and how that all happens. You've been in England, you've done some work in England, you've played in England, you've coached in England. You come to the USA, you're there for a while, I guess, and then you decide to leave the US and come to Canada. So maybe explain how that all happened and where in Canada you set up camp and moved around, etc. Maybe explain that a bit for us.
Yeah, so I left America. I'd been there 5 years, and I kind of run out of the visas, and it was going to be a lot more complicated to stay. So I went back to Europe for a little bit, hung out, and took a couple of years out just to decide what to do. And then I actually went to Ghana, volunteer soccer coach for 3 months. And that reignited sort of the coaching for me. So while I was there, I applied for an open work visa for Canada, which you can do from England. Got it and moved to Canada in 2007. I actually landed on Halloween in Vancouver and was staying in a hostel on Granville Street.
Yeah,
and it was I'd never seen Halloween like it. It was absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
So I got a... I moved to the Okanagan, and I got a job there at a ski resort, at Silver Star there, and I worked that for a bit just to get a footing in Canada, and got my residency, and then I started coaching again. I moved to Vancouver. I worked for a big girls club there, North Shore Girls Soccer Club, mostly in Vancouver, coaching and doing a few other programs for the club, and doing some of the coaching. And then I got offered a full-time position in Alberta with a club as their grassroots manager. So I moved there. I did a few years of that. And then I got work with Alberta Soccer. So I was working in the grassroots department for Alberta Soccer and assistant coach for a women's university team there in Edmonton. And then I've always wanted to come to Ontario. Always thought that, you know, it's such a big place. I think you've got to experience it if you're going to do soccer in Canada. So I was looking around and the position became available at Richmond Hill. So I applied and luckily I got the position and been here about 4 months, I think now, 3 or 4 months. And it's been very enjoyable and I'm definitely still learning a lot of things.
Again, wonderful experiences, Sue, and something that just, first of all, develop you as a human being, which is really, really important. Good people make good coaches. And it sounds very much your travels around the US and travels around Canada, the different experiences you've had, the different roles you've had, the jobs you've had will certainly help when you're working with people. And for me, coaching is all about how you communicate and the relationships you build with people. And as it sounds with the experiences you have and the different roles you've had, you've certainly well developed in that area. So you're now in Richmond Hill, Sue. You've been here, as you say, for 3 months or so. What do you see as your sort of main role or the main function of your position here at Richmond Hill, Sue? Maybe you could explain to the listeners exactly what you do and maybe touch on what your main objective is and some of the day-to-day things you get involved in.
Yeah, so my main role here with Richmond Hill is the U9 to U12 players. So I'm looking after a lot of the rep programs, the outdoor. I was just kind of getting a feel for what's going on and seeing how the programs run. Going forward, I'm going to play a lot larger role in those programs. So both on the field and off the field, I see myself being involved in the coaching aspect of all the teams, both boys and girls. I also do a lot of the admin. So currently we're setting up everything ready for the indoor season. All the scheduling, all the coaches, any questions from parents. I'm pretty good with the customer service parental from all my experiences. I also worked when I went to Europe, I worked as a customer service rep in ski resorts and beach resorts, and it teaches you a lot about experiences of dealing with people in different situations. So I think, and going forward, we're looking to possibly introduce some new programs, some new ideas. Like I say, I can bring in some coaching ideas from different countries and different programs that we've used, and hopefully we can bring those in and enhance the player experience here at Richmond Hill.
Yeah, great. So it's interesting you talk about your role, and certainly been around football here in Canada for a while. I think it's important that people understand, especially people who are not involved in the game, maybe a member of a club or a parent of a club or a volunteer coach, the amount of work that goes on behind the scenes. You mentioned things like scheduling games and scheduling practice times and making sure everyone has a balanced practice schedule, and everyone wants the prime times, obviously, for these events, and trying to balance all that out and keep everyone happy. Understanding that you won't keep everyone happy, but doing your best to meet people's demands, and, you know, hiring coaches and making sure coaches are trained in the proper way, and developing curriculum and communication with parents, you know, that formal communication through email and parents meetings and phone calls. I see you on the phone constantly, and I see you constantly responding to emails from parents who have got questions about their son or daughter's programs and what's next, and obviously the payroll for the coaches that you're in charge of as well. So most people just see the on-field stuff, which is probably the smallest portion of your work. Very, very important part of the job, obviously, that face-to-face with the young players. But the stuff that goes on, the hours and hours every week that goes on behind the scenes that no one really sees, but very, very important to make sure programs run successfully. So I'm going to put you in the spot a bit here soon. What can the players, the young players, the coaches? What can they expect from you soon? Maybe even the parents of those young players and the coaches that you work with. What can they expect from you? How would Sue Herring explain herself? What are some of the things that you think that they can expect from you?
I think they can expect that everything, you know, everything's going to be organised. Everything's going to be set for them, so that any questions they have are going to be answered. Like you say, I know right now a lot of people have questions going into the indoor season about how things are going to run, schedules, how programs are operated. So hopefully there's a really good open line of communication, both for coaches, parents and players, as to what they can expect and also the expectations of them from the club. I'd like to think that we're going to put programs on that everybody can access. So we're trying to be, again this year, we're trying to be very open with the indoor programming. We understand that there's a multi-sport and people have hard schedules, so trying to be accessible to all there and offer different programs that people can tailor for their own needs. I think the coaches can expect to get full curriculum, full support for anything that they need. And the players can expect that I'll be on the field as much as I can as well, because I definitely still want to do that, and I want to be involved with coaching and making sure the kids are enjoying their programs.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. It's important. You said a couple of words there that kind of got my attention, and you know that flexibility and that accommodation of players, including all and as many programs as you want to be involved in. It's certainly something that the club here at Richmond Hill is very proud of, that they will accommodate people, that flexibility with players, understanding that these young players, the multi-sport approach is so important. So yes, soccer is important, but not any more important than basketball or gymnastics or swimming or any of those things. They actually encourage our young players to participate in those programs alongside the soccer program, so they become all-round better athletes, and good athletes will make good soccer players as well as good basketball players, volleyball players, swimmers, hockey, whatever they finally turn their hand to. So I'm glad to see that you mentioned that, Sue, because it's so important that parents understand that as well. Sue, we're getting to the end. Obviously, we have a time limit in these things. We're trying to get around 25, 30 minutes, so we're getting close to that. So if you had to describe your philosophy, Sue, I've started asking our guests this to kind of wrap things up. If you had just to describe your philosophy in three words, what would those three words be, Sue?
So I think the most important philosophy, the most important one is fun. Again, my focus is on the younger players, but I think even the older players and adults, it should be fun. We don't want to do something if it's not fun, so how can we make sure that the players are going to enjoy it? And also the parents have a good, enjoyable experience. My next one would be, as we kind of covered before, would be inclusive. I think we need to make sure that the soccer is available to all, not just the top players, but players that maybe just want to come and kick a ball around once a week. They're not all going to get to university. They're not all going to be OPDL players, and really not many are going to be professional. So can we just make sure everybody gets to play how they want to play? And then my last one, and I'm going to cheat a little bit here. I'm going to put a little hyphenated word. So I'm going to say life skills, and that was kind of touched on again before with the multi-sport. But I think it's important that we're trying to develop not just players, but good people. So I think the skills that we can teach the you know, the young players that will help them in school and will help them in life are really important as well. It's not just about soccer. It's about rounding them to be good people.
I agree 100%, Sue. It's wonderful, those life skills to create good people. I'm a big believer that's our main objective in a soccer club this size. It's a huge club. And as you mentioned, very, very few will go on to become professionals. We wish them, we want them, if that's what their objective is to become a professional male or female soccer player. We certainly provide that service. We have very qualified, experienced and knowledgeable coaches here who can certainly help young players on that journey. But most importantly, creating those good people who can go out into society and be productive members of society. They're going to end up mums and dads and parents, and then they're going to have jobs. They're going to be clerical people and managers and shop assistants and bankers and et cetera, and it's allowing them to be integrated into those environments and be successful in whatever they choose. So fun, yeah, 100%. It's a game, it's a sport, and you should have fun playing these games, and we want our young players to have fun, and we want our coaches to have fun doing that. And inclusive, yeah, we want anyone who wants to come and play soccer, we'll find a program for you that meets your needs and your potential. And if you change your mind later on and you want more or you want less, we can certainly do that as well. So Sue's three, a push on the life skills. Yeah, okay, I'll give you that, Sue. You're going to hyphenate that and make life skills one word, but one word. Fun, inclusive, and life skills. Life skills, wonderful, wonderful. So Sue, thanks for today. It's been great talking with you. Obviously, we could talk a lot longer, but we try and wrap these things up around 25-30 minutes for the listeners. I hope you've enjoyed listening to Sue. It's been great hearing her experiences and her travels around the world. Selfishly, I hope she stops her travels here at Richmond Hill and doesn't decide to take off somewhere else. We need good people and good coaches like Sue here working with the kids at the club. And it's an exciting time for Richmond Hill to have people of Sue's quality, experience and knowledge and qualifications here working with our coaches and young players. So as you know, all of our podcasts are available on iTunes, so please subscribe and leave a review if you've enjoyed it. Please visit our club website at richmondhillsoccer.com and on Twitter at RH Soccer Club. So until the next time, thank you very much and goodbye.